All right, we're going to have some fun now. Wednesday, 5 p.m., Hump Day, 90.3 WHBC, WHPC HD, time for American Idiot Radio. Tom Ryan and Heidi Morales Ryan in the house, doing what we do on every Wednesday. Talk about music, play albums, especially play albums. Trying to salvage albums. Albums were so important for my entire life. I mean, literally from the time I was born up until now, I pretty much obtained almost all of my knowledge about music from albums, radio playing albums and segments of albums, and then buying and collecting. And of course, with the digital age, albums seem to have been like falling out of favor. They just don't get the attention that they deserve. So that's part of what we're doing on Wednesday, is trying to basically retain some interest for albums and album history, especially. So we've been playing a list that started in 1955 and working our way through it to play a total of 1,000 by the time we're done. And from 1955 on up, and we've got a list of top 500 albums and another list of alternative albums. And this album happens to be from our top 500 list, released in January of 1976, just about to enjoy its, well, at least, do you celebrate a 50th anniversary if you're an album? I don't know. Maybe that's too much. But this is a special album. It's called Station to Station by David Bowie. And, man, this is something that I don't even know if everybody's even aware of this, but did you see the movie The Man Who Fell to Earth? That's the movie where Bowie plays the alien comes from another planet, and he's trying to basically save his planet by figuring out a way to bring water back to his planet or some such thing. Bowie is the alien in that movie. And yeah, you see him removing his eyes, and he's got these cat eyes underneath or whatever. I mean, he was apparently in real life about 80 pounds at that point in time when that film was being made. Well, that character in that movie, The Man Who Fell to Earth, the alien, that character became the Thin White Duke, and he made an album. This is really an album by that alien. Even the album cover is from the movie. If you look at the cover of Station to Station, it's a picture of Bowie from the Man Who Fell to Earth as he enters his spaceship before he goes back to his planet. That's the cover of Station to Station. So there's a few things about the album I want to talk about before we play it. Now, when Bowie released Station to Station in January 1976, many critics referred to the album as a, quote, transitional record for Bowie, which in retrospect strikes me as pretty funny, really. I mean, looking back at Bowie's catalog, what album wasn't a traditional album? You know, I mean, didn't this guy change it changed styles like up front on every single album that he released? I mean, the real transition taking place here was regarding Bowie's private life. He had developed at this point in time an impossibly toxic addiction to cocaine, and it affected every aspect of his being. I mean, of course, it wasn't intended to be publicized, but anybody who saw Bowie's performance in The Man Who Fell to Earth could put two and two together. Paranoia enveloped him, his marriage failed, his friendships withered away. The Thin White Duke became this semi-real being, quote, a nasty character indeed, in Bowie's own words, who spoke of love with an iciness that included, like, quote, throwing darts in lovers' eyes. The result was ice-cold soul music, or you could even call it soulless soul music, played by really the best band that Bowie had ever assembled. And if you want proof of that, you can listen to the recording from March 23rd, 1976 of this band who recorded this album playing right around the corner here at Nassau Coliseum. It is probably some of the best live music I'd ever heard in my entire life. Heidi, you know, I've played it for you, and it's just, it's startling. It I don't think I've ever heard a better live show ever by anybody. Anyway, for Bowie, the endless intake of cocaine that he was absorbing meant that the band would be working straight through for days at a time, while Bowie's mental state kept the music on edge. And everything, as a result, was like 100% original. In a career that bounced all over the place, somehow, Station to Station is an unexpected peak. I don't think Bowie even necessarily knew what was going on. He has Carlos Alomar and Earl Slick on guitar. And what Bowie wanted out of them more than anything else was to not sound like anybody else. He didn't want them to come up with licks. He wanted them to come up with sounds. And you'll get a feeling for that at the beginning of the opening track as Bowie stretches it out as long as he possibly can. It's called Station to Station.
Lost in my circle. Thank you.
Wow. I honestly think that might be the best produced song of Bowie's entire career. It is like, it's stunningly perfect in its production, which is unbelievably remarkable considering his state of mind. I should mention also, for any Bruce Springsteen fans out there, all that piano on that song at the end, that's all Roy Bataan. That's Bruce Springsteen's piano player on this album. All the pianos, Roy Bataan. Setting this up, I mean, before this album was being made, Bowie actually announced that he was retiring from rock music. Here's his quote. "I've rocked my roll. It's a boring dead end. There will be no more rock and roll records or tours from me. The last thing I want to be is some useless effing rock singer." He was done with it, man. I mean, that's unbelievable. Now, he decides at that point that he's going to be an actor, and then he ends up signing with Nicholas Roeg. And with Roeg's agreement for Bowie to play like the lead role in The Man Who Fell to Earth, Bowie developed his own look for the film. And this ended up carrying through to his public image over the next 12 months. He was living the alien, in a sense, including that, like, that look of like you could break him if you blew on him, he'd break in half, and his aloofness. And that's where Bowie got this idea for the Thin White Duke. And that became this album. All right. He began writing songs while the movie was taking place. And one of the songs that he wrote is Word on a Wing. And that was the next song. It was actually Word on a Wing, and excuse me, Golden Years. That became the single. So let's play that right now. Golden Years.
Hear you say life's taking you nowhere.
Angel,
come up, baby. Look at that sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young. Opening doors and pulling some strings.
Angel,
come baby. In walk luck and you looked in time. Never look back, walk tall, act fine. Of a dream car, 20-foot long. Don't cry, my sweet, don't break my heart. Doing all right, you've got to get smart. Wish upon day, I believe, oh Lord, I believe all the way.
Come, baby,
run for the shadows, run for the shadows, run for the shadows in these golden years.
There's my baby lost, that's all.
Me hear you say life's taking you nowhere.
Angel,
come up, baby. Run for the shadows, run for the shadows, run for the shadows in these golden years.
I'll stick with you, baby, for a thousand years. Nothing's gonna touch you in these golden years.
Go,
go.
Golden years, golden years, golden years.
was the hit single from the album, Station to Station, Golden Years. I misspoke, by the way. I said that it was one of the songs that he was writing when he was making the movie. It's because I was thinking about Word on a Wing. I had the songs misplaced in terms of the track listing. That was actually written, as you can tell, really, like kind of like after the album Young Americans was finished, because it's kind of in that same style as Young Americans. But he kind of gave it a little bit more of an aloofness to it. It didn't have that, there was no sense of innocence to it on this album. There's nothing resembling innocence on Station to Station. Word on a Wing is the song that he was writing while he was playing the alien. His role of Thomas Newton, I think, was the name of the character in the movie. But while Bowie was doing that and while he was filming, these are his own words when you're talking about his personal addiction. This is his quote. "I paid with the worst manic depression of my life. My psyche went through the roof. It just fractured into pieces. I was hallucinating 24 hours a day. I'd felt like I'd fallen into the bowels of the earth." Because I was so blocked, so stoned. It's quite a casualty case, isn't it? I'm amazed I came out of that period, honest. When I see that now, I cannot believe that I survived it. I was so close to really throwing myself away physically, completely. Here's a song that he wrote in that frame of mind, Word on a Wing.
Sleep, wake, no one was again for me.
Complete what was side one of the vinyl album Station to Station, half of the first half of what is my personal favorite David Bowie album. That's saying something because I am a very, very, very big Bowie fan. I love his albums. I remind you that you are listening to American Radio on 90.3 WHBC, WHBC HD in Garden City, New York. And we're here every Wednesday and Friday between 5 and 6 p.m. We're going to flip the vinyl record over, if we really had a vinyl record. Of course, I'm playing a digital version of it, actually. I want to talk about the band, though, and how this all came together before we get to the next track. The band themselves loved this thing mostly because they could do anything they want to. There were no time restraints on anything. And there was what was really weird is that there were no rehearsals. Bowie didn't want anybody to rehearse, which is obviously an unusual thing. I mean, despite his paranoia, and he was really suffering from intense paranoia, as from his previous quotes, he managed to put together the best band that he would ever have in his entire career, which is, again, really saying something, considering that he had people like Rick Wakeman, Adrian Belew, Mick Ronson, of course, with the Spiders from Mars, Mike Garson. He had some amazing bands. But in this band, he had some of the people who were on Young Americans, like Carlos Alomar and Earl Slick coming back, drummer Dennis Davis, who's an amazing, amazing player, his friend Jeff McCormick, and he brought in bassist George Murray to play bass, and it was Earl Slick who suggested Roy Batan come in because Mike Garson had backed out, and Roy Batan said that David knew that we were coming to town, and he wanted a keyboard player. It must have only been about 3 days, but it's one of my favorite projects that I've ever worked on. They loved each other. David was like super like into what Roy Batan was doing and vice versa. They really liked each other's work. Now, because of Bowie's heavy cocaine use, he says he remembers only small flashes of the album production, and almost none of it in the studio. He says, because I know it was in L.A. because I've read it was. Now, some of the people were saying, like, you know, Carlos Alomar, in fact, says it was one of the most glorious albums that I've ever done. We experimented so much on it. There was no rehearsals. He goes, I loved the sessions because we were totally open and experimental in our approach. Slick said that no rehearsal thing was advantageous because it resulted in a cleaner performance. There were several 24-hour nonstop sessions. Was cocaine involved? Work would begin at 7 a.m. one day and end at 9 a.m. the next day. And Bowie would sometimes bring a bed into the studio while they were working. So he would sometimes work for a solid 4 days with these crazy hours, take a few days off to rest. The owner of the studio said he would come in after leaving at night, and that they'd come in the next day and they would all still be working from the night before. He'd leave, come back, and they would still be working. Unbelievable. Some of that, though, led to a certain amount of playfulness, and one song came out with, like, actually a pretty lively feel-good tune. Pretty funny, considering how serious Bowie was about everything. It's called TVC-15. Oh, that's about as close as we get to a sense of humor on the album, which is pretty good, actually. It's just, I mean, the band, the album needed some sort of levity. But again, it takes you back to the movie. If you've watched The Man Who Fell to Earth, I remember there was a scene where Bowie, as the alien, is in a room and he's surrounded by TVs, like I don't know, dozens or hundreds of them. I don't know, and every TV is on a different channel, and he's taking them all in. He's like watching every single TV in like super fast mode. I guess as you would imagine that an alien would be able to take all of that in and taking that information in. And I guess that's sort of what TVC-15 is about. Bowie was literally living his character and bringing things from the movie into his own reality, in a sense. So there's that. Now, the next song up is the song Stay. And this is pretty much like where I think Bowie's genius comes into play as a producer. That is just remarkable, because he would walk into the studio. I mean, I think I've made the point already, more or less, but he didn't come in with complete songs. He came in with fragments, and he didn't want the band to rehearse to come up with a full arrangement. He wanted them to piece things together and come up with something, which is why a song like Station to Station has the changes. They go from one section to another, and they don't necessarily come back to where they were. His co-producer, Harry Maslin, said this about Bowie: "I think he's far more advanced than the average producer. He knows a great deal about technical things. He doesn't know everything. He's not an engineer, but he knows more about arranging a song. He knows more about how to relate to people and get what he wants out of them. If you listen to the rhythms specifically on this album, they are very, very strange things going on rhythmically between all of the instruments. If nothing else, David's a genius when it comes to working out rhythmic feels. He was the mainstay behind it all." I read that quote because when you have to listen to this song to hear the dozens of different rhythmic things that are going on all at the same time. This was the song that when I heard the live version at Nassau Coliseum, I said to myself, this is the best live song I've ever heard in my entire life. This is just this band playing this live. This is impossible. I really do recommend that you find it, because it's super human. And this is the studio version, so it sounds superhuman, but okay, I get that. In a studio, you can do a lot of things to make something sound amazing. But the live version takes it, and it's mixed to the point of really disbelief. But this is Bowie throwing together all of these different rhythmic things and making them work perfectly. The song is called Stay. We'll be right back. Man, I don't know. This song, that's just such an amazing track on so many levels. That song Stay. And to hear that live, sounding pretty much exactly as technically perfect as the album, but with it a live energy as well, is something to behold. If you buy I think there's like a special edition version of this album, Station to Station, that came out with an extra disc, and the second disc is a recording of the live show at Nassau Coliseum. And it's worth it. It's absolutely, I mean, it's beyond worth it. I mean, I'm not kidding. It's sort of like hearing like the Allman Brothers at Fillmore East. But in a way even more remarkable. Yeah, your brain will explode. It's something else. It really is. Now, the album ends on a really unusual note because it's a song that Bowie didn't write. And he wasn't really one to do a lot of cover songs. Up to this point, I mean, I can think of a few. I know that he did a Beatles song. He did the John Lennon song, Across the Universe. I guess there was a cover song that was on Ziggy Stardust, too. But nobody ever really thinks of it that way because everybody thinks of it as Bowie's song, obviously. But there's not a lot that he would cover. So when Wild as the Wind appeared on this album, it was especially odd because, well, it's a song written by Dimitri Tiomkin and Ned Washington. I don't know who they are, though. But it was Johnny Mathis who sang it and made it famous because it was the title song for the movie Wild as the Wind in 1957. But the thing is, Bowie heard it because Nina Simone covered it in 1966, and he loved it. His quote was, "Her performance really affected me. I thought it was just tremendous. So I recorded it as an homage to Nina." Apparently, a guest during the sessions was Frank Sinatra. And I can't imagine, in my wildest dreams, Frank Sinatra walking into a recording studio while an 80-pound, coke-ravaged David Bowie is working, and that they would, on some level, be able to communicate. Because Bowie said that he was found it incapable to even speak to anybody. But Sinatra himself praised Bowie's recording of Wild as the Wind. And I don't think Sinatra's one to give much praise to anybody unless he really means it. So it was his feedback that gave Bowie the incentive to include it as the album's closing track. So thank you, Frank. We owe that to Frank Sinatra. A tip of the hat to the man who always had a hat to tip. Everybody, thanks so much. We had a blast. I hope you really enjoyed hearing this album, and we'll see you next Friday. Take care, everybody. Let's
Your life itself.